File 65.
But this has nothing to do with nomadic life as such, because the Jew does not ever think of leaving a territory which he has once occupied. He sticks where he is with such tenacity that he can hardly be driven out even by superior physical force. He expands into new territories only when certain conditions for his existence are provided therein. But even then, unlike the nomad, he will not change his former abode. He is and remains a parasite, a sponger, who, like a pernicious bacillus, spreads over wider and wider areas according as some favourable area attracts him. The effect produced by his presence is also like that of the vampire, for wherever he establishes himself, the people who grant him hospitality are bound to be bled to death sooner or later. Thus the Jew has at all times lived in states that have belonged to other races, and within the organization of those states he had formed a state of his own, which is, however, hidden behind the mask of a religious community, as long as external circumstances do not make it advisable for this community to declare its true nature. As soon as the Jew feels himself sufficiently established in his position to be able to hold it without a disguise, he lifts the mask and suddenly appears in the character which so many did not formerly believe or wish to see, namely, that of the Jew. The life which the Jew lives as a parasite, thriving on the substance of other nations and states, has resulted in developing that specific character which Schopenhauer once described when he spoke of the Jew as the great master of lies. The kind of existence which he leads forces the Jew to the systematic use of falsehood, just as naturally as the inhabitants of northern climates are forced to wear warm clothes. He can live among other nations and states only as long as he succeeds in persuading them that the Jews are not a distinct people, but the representatives of a religious faith, who thus constitute a religious community, though this be of a peculiar character. As a matter of fact, however, this is the first of his great falsehoods. He is obliged to conceal his own particular character and mode of life, that he may be allowed to continue his existence as a parasite among the nations. The greater the intelligence of the individual Jew, the better will he succeed in deceiving others. His success in this line may even go so far that the people who grant him hospitality may be led to believe that the Jew among them is a genuine Frenchman, for instance, or Englishman, or German, or Italian, who just happens to belong to a religious denomination which is different from that prevailing in these countries. Especially in circles concerned with the executive administration of the state, where the officials generally only have a minimum of historical sense, the Jew is able to impose his infamous deception with comparative ease. In these circles, independent thinking is considered a sin against the sacred rules according to which official promotion takes place. It is therefore not surprising that even today in the Bavarian government offices, for example, there is not the slightest suspicion that the Jews form a distinct nation themselves, and are not merely the adherents of a confession, though one glance at the press which belongs to the Jews ought to furnish sufficient evidence to the contrary, even for those who possess only the smallest degree of intelligence. The Jewish Echo, however, is not an official gazette, and therefore not authoritative in the eyes of those government potentates. Jewry has always been a nation of a definite racial character, and never differentiated merely by the fact of belonging to a certain religion. At a very early date, urged on by the desire to make their way in the world, the Jews began to cast about for a means whereby they might distract such attention as might prove inconvenient for them. What could be more effective and at the same time more above suspicion than to borrow and utilize the idea of the religious community? Here, also, everything is copied, or rather stolen, for the Jew could not possess any religious institution which had developed out of his own consciousness, seeing that he lacks every kind of idealism, which means that belief in a life beyond this terrestrial existence is foreign to him. In the Aryan mind, no religion can ever be imagined unless it embodies the conviction that life in some form or other will continue after death. As a matter of fact, the Talmud is not a book that lays down principles according to which the individual should prepare for the life to come. It only furnishes rules for a practical and convenient life in this world. The religious teaching of the Jews is principally a collection of instructions for maintaining the Jewish blood pure and for regulating intercourse between Jews and the rest of the world. That is to say, their relation with non-Jews. But the Jewish religious teaching is not concerned with moral problems. It is rather concerned with economic problems, and very petty ones at that. In regard to the moral value of the religious teaching of the Jews, there exist, and always have existed, quite exhaustive studies, not from the Jewish side, for whatever the Jews have written on this question has naturally always been of a tendentious character, which show up the kind of religion that the Jews have in a light that makes it look very uncanny to the Aryan mind. The Jew himself is the best example of the kind of product which this religious training evolves. His life is of this world only, and his mentality is as foreign to the true spirit of Christianity as his character was foreign to the great founder of this new creed 2,000 years ago. And the founder of Christianity made no secret indeed of his estimation of the Jewish people. When he found it necessary, he drove those enemies of the human race out of the temple of God, because then, as always, they used religion as a means of advancing their commercial interests. But at that time, Christ was nailed to the cross for his attitude towards the Jews, whereas our modern Christians enter into party politics, and when elections are being held, they debase themselves to beg for Jewish votes. They even enter into political intrigues with the atheistic Jewish parties against the interests of their own Christian nation. On this first and fundamental lie, the purpose of which is to make people believe that Jewry is not a nation but a religion, other lies are subsequently based. One of those further lies, for example, is in connection with the language spoken by the Jew. For him, language is not an instrument for the expression of his inner thoughts, but rather a means of cloaking them. When talking French, his thoughts are Jewish, and when writing German rhymes, he only gives expression to the character of his own race. As long as the Jew has not succeeded in mastering other peoples, He is forced to speak their language, whether he likes it or not. But the moment that the world would become the slave of the Jew, it would have to learn some other language. Esperanto, for example. So that by this means the Jew could dominate all the more easily. How much the whole existence of this people is based on a permanent falsehood is proved in a unique way by the protocols of the elders of Zion, which are so violently repudiated by the Jews. With groans and moans, the Frankfurter Zeitung repeats again and again that these are forgeries. This alone is evidence in favour of their authenticity. What many Jews unconsciously wish to do is here clearly set forth. It is not necessary to ask out of what Jewish brain these revelations sprang, but what is of vital interest is that they disclose, with an almost terrifying precision, the mentality and methods of action characteristic of the Jewish people, and these writings expound in all their various directions the final aims towards which the Jews are striving. The study of real happenings, however, is the best way of judging the authenticity of those documents. If the historical developments which have taken place within the last few centuries be studied in the light of this book, we shall understand why the Jewish press necessarily repudiates and denounces it. For the Jewish peril will be stamped out the moment the general public comes into possession of that book and understand it. In order to get to know the Jew properly, it is necessary to study the road which he has been following among the other peoples during the last few centuries. One example will suffice to give a clear insight here. Since his career has been the same at all epochs, just as the people at whose expense he has lived have remained the same, for the purposes of making the requisite analysis, it will be best to mark his progress by stages. For the sake of simplicity, we shall indicate these stages by letters of the alphabet. The first Jews came into what was then called Germania during the period of the Roman invasion, and as usual they came as merchants. During the turmoil caused by the great migrations of the German tribes, the Jews seem to have disappeared. We may therefore consider the period when the Germans formed the first political communities as the beginning of that process whereby Central and Northern Europe was again, and this time permanently, Judaized. A development began which has always been the same, or similar, wherever and whenever Jews came into contact with Aryan peoples.